That concludes the legislative item. That brings us to item 12, briefing on BCDC enforcement programs. No. Oh, sorry, it's in the wrong, it's right. I apologize. Briefing on Oyster Point compliance. Important to a number of people in the audience as well as to the commission and the staff. We will have a briefing on BCDC's liveaboard policies and an update on the Oyster Cove Marina liveaboard compliance issue. Eric Beeman, our long-range planning manager, will apparently start the presentation.
Reg, you got my presentation. What's that?
Angela.
Oh, Angela, sorry.
We are definitely out of practice.
Wait for it to come up. Is it up?
Not yet. There you go.
Cool. Thank you, Angela. Thank you, Chair Wasserman and Commissioners. I'm Eric Beeman. I'm the Long Range Planning Manager at BCDC. Next slide, please. Since the Oyster Point Marina relocation issue came up last year, and even before that with the settlement agreements related to anchor outs in Richardson Bay, there has been some interest by the Commission and the public in the Commission's liveaboard boat policies in the San Francisco Bay Plan. Today, we are providing an overview of this issue, beginning with an overview of the McAteer-Petras Act and how it treats residential uses in the Bay. I will go over briefly the concept of the public trust because it's important to understand, both to understand the McAteer-Petras Act requirements and the background of the Bay Plan policies. I will go over the recreation policies in the Bay Plan that relate to liveaboard boats, and then we will briefly discuss BCDC's staff recommendation on whether the Bay Plan should be amended to address liveaboard boats. Next slide, please. First, some history. By the middle of the 20th century, the Bay was experiencing a tragedy of the commons, as municipalities around the Bay were competing with one another to fill the Bay for a number of different uses, office, trash disposal, but also importantly for housing. Public awareness of the impacts from filling the Bay increased, catalyzed by large-scale controversial proposals, such as the infamous Reber Plan, a plan to fill the Emeryville Crescent to create islands of residential communities, and in particular, the West Bay Plan, which proposed to bulldoze half the San Bruno Mountain and fill the Bay for a sprawling residential development. Kay Kerr, Sylvia McLaughlin, and Esther Gulick formed Save the Bay in 1961 to protect the Bay as a result of their grassroots efforts. The McAteer-Petras Act was created by it created BCDC in 1965. Next slide, please. That background is important to understand the requirements and goals of the McAteer-Petras Act. The Act has a number of requirements that must be met for the Commission to authorize fill in the Bay. Most importantly for our discussion, the fill must be for a water-oriented use. It must be a minimum fill necessary and have no alternative upland location. What is a water-oriented use? It is not housing. It is not office. It is not trash. Those uses inherently have an alternative upland location. A water-oriented use should be a use that must be on the water. Some examples include marinas, port facilities, habitat restoration. In this way, the McAteer-Petras Act establishes that residential uses should be located in upland and infill areas and should not be developed in the San Francisco Bay. You can even think of the McAteer-Petras Act as a type of very early anti-sprawl statute, intending to reserve fill for water-oriented uses and to stop the uncontrolled filling of the Bay for residential uses in office and garbage. Next slide, please. The McAteer-Petras Act is an expression of the public trust, a legal concept that has its roots in ancient Rome. Basically, the public trust is a common law idea that the public owns certain interests and rights in navigable waterways. The public trust evolves over time. As it originally developed, it was concerned with protecting the right to shipping or fishing in a waterway. Today, it's broadened to include recreation uses and wildlife restoration, and protection. The State Lands Commission has jurisdiction over ungranted tidelands and administers the state's interest in tidal lands granted to local governments to act as trustee and ensure these properties are used in compliance with the public trust and legislative grants. The public trust ensures that no one can truly own the bay except for the people of the state of California. And whenever it is developed, its use is subject to public trust principles for the benefit of the public. You can see how this conflicts with the idea of private property ownership, particularly for residential uses. For example, one of the important bundle of rights you have when you own property is the right to exclude, the right to control. But that can conflict with the public's right to public trust land. In addition, once residential development is built, we should consider that it will be there indefinitely, all things being equal. As a result, residential uses and general office uses are not consistent with the public trust. The MacTier Petrus Act reflects the public trust by requiring fill be used for water and deed use or public access to the bay. Next slide, please. Oh, public trust, yeah. Yeah, this is the right one. As you know, unlike some other types of plans, the Bay Plan is incorporated into the MacTier Petrus Act requirements. It's more than a regulation. Well, let me say, when I talk about policies in the Bay Plan, I'm talking about regulations. They have the power of law in a lot of ways. BCDC cannot approve a permit for a project that is not consistent with the Bay Plan. Amending the Bay Plan is a quasi-legislative action. It is, in a sense, a change to BCDC's regulations. However, it goes further than that, because amending the plan is so significant that the MacTier Petrus Act requires a two-third vote of the commission, the full commission, except for less significant map changes, to do an amendment to the Bay Plan. The San Francisco Bay Plan includes findings and policies on the public trust. I've put them here, as you can see. And these policies underline how the commission permits development and approaches other policies in the Bay Plan, as we will see next. Next slide, please. I go through this background because it is important to understand the principles that underline the commission's policies on liveaboard boats. BCDC's regulations define liveaboard boats as a boat that is not a transient boat, that is capable of being used for active self-propelled navigation, and that is occupied as a residence under the state's definition of a residence. This differentiates it from a houseboat under the commission's definition, which is not capable of self-propelled navigation. The Bay Plan includes policies on liveaboard boats and the recreation policies. The recreation policies include many other policies on waterfront parks, marinas, small boat launches, beaches, and other water-related recreational activities. The liveaboard boat policies are in a subset of policies related to development and use of recreational marinas. They were first adopted around 1985, the result of an extensive study and policy review by the commission around the time that the commission was grappling with how BCDC should treat existing houseboat marinas and other anchor out issues, primarily in Richardson Bay. The liveaboard boat policies state that the liveaboards should be allowed only if the number of boats does not exceed 10% of the authorized berths in a recreational marina. That 10% can be increased if the applicant can clearly find that the increase is necessary to provide security or other use incidental to the marina use. Excuse me. The findings on these policies state, although residential use is neither a water-oriented or a public trust use, liveaboard boats can be converted easily to a navigable recreational use and, when properly located within a recreational boat marina, can provide a degree of security to the marina. The commission provided for a limited exception to residential uses in the bay for liveaboard boats for security purposes. The eyes on the dock from residents at the marina provide a security benefit to the public trust recreational marina use. The policies are intended to encourage and strengthen that public trust use, the recreation use. As you can see, any increase in the percentage has to be justified based on a need that exists to support that recreational marina use. In the past, it's been suggested that the commission should increase the liveaboard exception greater than 10% to accommodate affordable housing. But affordable housing does not promote or further recreational marina use. It is not something that contributes to the public trust use. As a result, the commission would not have a justification to increase the liveaboard amount for that purpose. Liveaboard boats can have an adverse impact on bay resources and on public use of the shoreline if not accommodated appropriately. So there are additional policies that I've not included in this slide that also provide for a number of other requirements related to toilets, showers, pump outs, water circulation, and to ensure the liveaboard boats are distributed throughout the marina to ensure a security benefit. In permits for marinas that authorize liveaboard berths, BCDC includes special conditions to ensure there's adequate parking and that the presence of liveaboards does not impact public access. Next slide, please. Finally, I want to address a suggestion that has been raised a number of times in different contexts, that the commission should look into reviewing and revising the policies related to liveaboard boats, in particular to accommodate affordable housing or to accommodate liveaboard boaters who have been displaced by closing marinas. Review of the liveaboard boat policies would require a comprehensive review of the recreation policies in the Bay Plan. This is because these policies are integrally linked to supporting the recreational marina use, a public trust use. We do not know how modification of those policies would impact recreational facilities, and in particular, recreational marinas and boating around the bay. It isn't the type of issue where a 10% liveaboard boat exception can be modified in a vacuum. Even if it was, it would still require a significant amount of research and outreach to determine to different marinas around the bay. BCDC does not typically enter into policy amendment processes with a specific outcome preordained. Rather, as environmental justice and equity policies in the Bay Plan make clear, we must engage in a real honest planning process with substantial background research, community engagement, and the outcome of that sort of process is inherently uncertain when it's entered into with a general, even when it's entered into with a general goal in mind. The commission would have to initiate a Bay Plan amendment to conduct that review. That planning process would take 2 to 3 years and would probably require about 2 to 3 staff members to accomplish. This is one of the meatier policy sections of the Bay Plan. If you recall in my long-range planning presentation way back in January, BCDC's long-range planning staff has limited staff and resources and is already stretched thin. We are still trying to complete processes that have begun all the way back in 2017 and 2019 and were delayed for one reason or another, such as the Seaport Plan overhaul. There is no funding or staff available for such a review, to review these policies right now. And importantly, the Bay Adapt Regional Shoreline Adaptation Plan, including the guidelines developed over this next year, will force us to look at our plans and procedures in a new way and could result in significant long-range planning changes to the Bay Plan policies. Long-range planning staff have already begun to position ourselves for that moment, and shifting priorities to the recreation policies will seriously hamper this effort. Affordable housing should be an important goal for everyone in the Bay Area. It's critical. However, the McAteer-Petras Act is clear that residential uses should not be located in the Bay. They should be located in upland areas. In the past, local governments have looked to the Bay for housing, and the McAteer-Petras Act was passed in part to stop that. Since the use of the Bay for residential uses is simply not allowed by the McAteer-Petras Act, BCDC staff recommend that the commission not prioritize revisiting the liveaboard boat policies at this time. I want to end, though, by acknowledging that there are a number of liveaboard boaters who will be disappointed by this recommendation. And when I first started at BCDC, I was an analyst assigned to the closure and redevelopment of Pete's Harbor over 10 years ago, which was a marina in Redwood City filled with liveaboard boaters who were all displaced. And I and other staff have spent many hours listening to liveaboard boaters, hearing about the difficulties they often face, and so I don't make this presentation lightly. And BCDC has been open to creative solutions to issues related to liveaboards. Examples include collaborating with local governments and other agencies on regulatory and enforcement solutions to relocate the Oyster Point or Oyster Cove liveaboards, and creating regulatory mechanisms and a settlement agreement to relocate anchor outs in Richardson Bay. And we'll continue to be open to these creative solutions. Thank you, and that concludes my presentation. No action is required based on my presentation. John, yeah, you want to go to John?
Yeah. Yes, please.
Cool.
I hope Angela has my presentation as well.
I
Angela, can you share John's presentation?
Thank you very much, Eric. Thank you very much, Chairman Posterman. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is John Creech, and I'm on your compliance team. I'm here today to give you a brief update on the Oyster Point Marina compliance issue. I will then introduce Nell Solander of the City of South San Francisco to brief you on their efforts to reach full compliance. Next slide, please. Here's a quick overview to get you oriented. As you can see, Oyster Cove and Oyster Point Marinas are located in South San Francisco, San Mateo County. As their names indicate, they are both marinas as opposed to anchorages. Next slide, please, Ready. Angela, next slide, please. Thank you. Thanks, Larry. There are several distinctions that differentiate an anchorage from a marina. A marina, as pictured above, often has assigned berths that a boater can rent at the marina's discretion. A marina also often has utilities and amenities such as water, power, pump out services, restrooms, etc. An anchorage, as pictured on the bottom photo, on the other hand, is supposed to be a free, temporary, and does not offer any services. Next slide, please. As this map helps to illustrate, Oyster Cove and Oyster Point Marinas are very close to one another. Oyster Cove Marina to the northwest of Oyster Point Marina was purchased by a private developer. They indicated that they wished to cease operations as a marina and informed all boaters that there would no longer be slips for them by the end of October 2022. Oyster Point Marina to the east is owned by the City of South San Francisco and operated by the San Mateo Harbor District. As you probably remember hearing from public comments, many boaters at Oyster Cove Marina expressed concern that they would have nowhere to relocate upon the closure of Oyster Cove Marina. Next slide, please. In a letter dated September 29th, 2022, BCDC's Executive Director Goldspan informed co-permittee San Mateo County Harbor District and the City of South San Francisco that BCDC would temporarily allow for an increase of liveaboards at Oyster Point Marina in order to accommodate the boaters who were to be evicted from Oyster Cove Marina. To accomplish this, BCDC informed the co-permittees that BCDC would forego any enforcement proceedings for the course of 1 year to allow the city sufficient time to help the relocated boaters find permanent housing options for any liveaboards over the 10% limit, in this case, 40 slips. Established in the Bay Plan and in their permit. On October 26th, 2022, the City of South San Francisco and San Mateo County Harbor District responded to our letter and committed to providing monthly progress updates to staff to help residents find alternative permanent housing with help of an organization that specializes in relocation and to reach full compliance with all permit and all liveaboard policies by October 31st, 2023. Next slide, please. Oyster Cove Marina's listed date of eviction was October 31st, 2022. BCDC felt it would be appropriate to provide boaters and permittees 1 year from the date of the eviction to reach full compliance. 46 boaters moved from Oyster Cove to Oyster Point Marina. 15 of those were registered as liveaboards and 31 as recreational vehicles or vessels. In their most recent update, the City of South San Francisco informed us that of the 46, there are currently 14 remaining active cases of boaters seeking permanent housing, whether that's upland housing or permanent liveaboard slips at Oyster Point Marina or elsewhere. They are confident that they will achieve full compliance by October 31st of this year. Next slide, please. Thank you very much. And please let me introduce Nell Solander, the Director of Economic and Community Development of the City of South San Francisco.
Good afternoon. Nell Solander here with the City of South San Francisco. I guess I'm supposed to say, Angela, can you bring up my presentation? I'm getting the hang of this. I think you should have it. If not, I will start my remarks so that I'm not holding you all here to get on with the more important conversation of liveaboards generally throughout the Bay. All right, next slide. John has already given you the context here, but this is just zooming into Oyster Cove and Oyster Point. And to highlight, Oyster Cove is privately owned. Oyster Point is publicly owned by the city, operated by the Harbor District. So we've been working very, very closely with Jim Pruitt, who's the executive director of the Harbor District, and James Smith, who is the harbor master there, on the relocation of boaters that moved temporarily from Oyster Cove to Oyster Point. Next slide. Next slide. So as a bit of background, which John already went over, but I do want to highlight, because there are a couple discrepancies between his presentation and ours, just based on recent movement of voters. Following BCDC staff's relaxation of enforcement of the 10% liveaboard cap at Oyster Point Marina in late September, early October 2022, at the end of the day, so like as of last month, 48 boaters have actually moved. Not all of them are liveaboards. Many of them were recreational. We were keeping track of them because we wanted to make sure that we sort of knew who the Oyster Point Marina was taking in from Oyster Cove. So 48 boaters in total have moved, many of them not liveaboards. They're simply recreational boaters that sort of took the like sort of expedited access to move over. The city must also update BCDC monthly, so we've been doing that, keeping your staff abreast of our progress in relocating these boaters. Next slide. So the city contracted with Oakbrook. They're an experienced relocation firm. We really didn't feel like we could handle this internally. It requires a lot of case management. Oakbrook noticed by placing notices physically on the boats that moved of their services. We held a preliminary community meeting in late February to meet folks in person. City attended, Harbor District attended, as did Oakbrook. At the end of the day, Oakbrook received word from 24 boaters that they needed assistance either finding liveaboard slips elsewhere or moving upland. This is more than the number of liveaboard agreements with the Harbor District, mostly because there were a lot of folks that were precariously housed to begin with that moved, right? So they maybe weren't in a formal liveaboard agreement at Oyster Cove, and that's perpetuated at Oyster Point. Oyster Point obviously has much more enforcement activities, and many of these folks live at different marinas throughout the bay on different evenings, or maybe stay in a hotel or a vehicle, and were really in need of support in finding housing. So we included them all if they asked for help. Next slide. So of those seeking housing assistance, only about 15% really wanted to stay on their boats. And I think this really highlights how affordability really came to play in this sort of move from Oyster Cove to Oyster Point. 85% of them really did want to be in stable housing upland. Most were extremely low income, so making less than 30% of the area median income, and 2/3 are seniors. There were also a couple children, dependent minors, and one of which has now been enrolled in school. So that is one was already in school and the other had to be enrolled in school. So that was also a big upside to engaging a relocation consultant that could really build trust with this community. And many were connected with CalFresh benefits and other supportive services. Next slide. So success to date, Oakbrook took the initiative and responded to the County of San Mateo that had a request for proposals out for provider-based rental assistance vouchers. These are federal housing vouchers. They last for 5 years. They will basically pay almost all of a tenant's rent. The tenant pays only 30% of their income, and the voucher picks up the balance of whatever the contract rent is up to the federal government's limit on a contract rent. 13 of the boaters, as John mentioned, there are 14. There are 14 remaining. Did I get that right? Yes, 14 remaining, and 10 of the ones that are remaining will get these vouchers. Three have already been placed into stable housing, and Oak Brook anticipates moving of the remaining 10, six into permanent housing this month and four into permanent housing next month. As you might expect, many of these boaters cannot even afford a security deposit, and so they are availing themselves of rental assistance that is made available through the county and through the city through our local YMCA. So a lot of assistance coming to bear to move these folks into stable housing. And Oak Brook will case manage them through the 5 years of their vouchers to try to get them into more secure and subsidized housing at the end of those 5 years. Four boaters are seeking liveaboard slips elsewhere, and Oak Brook, through the contract, has provided I'm going to get the term wrong in a room full of folks that know a lot more than me about boats. They need to do surveys of the boats in order to qualify them for marinas elsewhere to make sure the boats are seaworthy and can pass muster at these other marinas. And so we've been able to provide that assistance and a lot of coaching and application support in making applications at other marinas for those liveaboard boaters. Those folks that want to stay on their boats. Next slide. So our next steps are really just the city is continuing to support Oak Brook, trying to make those connections. If they run into a barrier, we help to facilitate. Maybe it's another jurisdiction with a marina and we can knock on their door, sort of staff to staff, and say, hey, can you pay attention to our consultant? We are really trying to make this last push to get these boaters moved to stable housing. We're also working really closely with the Harbor District to make plans for what if we get to the end of October and there's still a voter or two that is not out. And so in advance of that, this month, we'll be sort of making those overtures to voters that are not making real progress or really working in good faith with Oak Brook and let them know, hey, this is sort of what the end of this looks like. We really need to be in compliance. So we're making those plans now and staying in close touch with the Harbor District. And next slide is just my contact information, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Anu, do we have, I have one card up here.
That's all that we have. We have one public commentary here in the room.
Matt Klein. You have 3 minutes.
As a push. There we are. I was in here a year ago. I was very happy to see that when we were evicted in a very sneaky way out of Oyster Cove Marina, all of the people, we had 34 residents there. Part of the reason we had 34 there is 219 slip marina, 10%, 21, 22, 34. Because of Docktown, because of Pete's Harbor. These people were brought in, a lot of our people gave up voluntarily their liveaboard status to the marina harbor master in order to allow those people in. Development, Bay Conservation Development Commission. You guys, man, are you guys busy. You do a lot of work. I've been really impressed. Both times that I've been in here, every time I've been on the web watching, you guys are busy. The Bay Conservation Development Commission does not have the time to consider whether raising the liveaboard allowance to 25% is possible because they just can't, they don't have the staff, they don't have the time. I believe that. The fact is, this is housing. Those boats are already there in the marinas. It's a 3-day allowable, all right? You've got an enforcement division here. I don't know who does it. The housing is there. It's, you mentioned something about building housing on the bay. You're not going to be building housing. It's there. These are the vessel owners. We don't want it commodified into rental units. We want it to be our vessels that we live on. The waiting list at Oyster Point Marina, and I've spoken to the harbor master, just asked them how long is it? And they were a little miffed that we were put in there because they really care about their residents, the people, the residents and their slip holders and the people on the waiting list. We had to jump over them to be allowed in there because we were evicted because of development in South San Francisco. Development is fantastic. It brings tax base. It brings money to the city. That's fantastic. It displaced us for no good reason. There will be slips in that marina with boats in them, with vessels, but we won't be able to live there. Bring it up to 25%. You don't need to do a study. If you do need to do a study, let us know what you need to study. We'll figure it out. I live on a boat. I'm gone over. Can you still hear me? Thank you. I live on a boat. I work in the marine industry. I fix concrete hulls out to Sausalito. I was talking to one of the guys at List Marine, Hans List. He's second generation. They tried to build housing over at the Marin ship. That got shut down, thank God. He lives on a boat. He couldn't afford to work here if he didn't live on his boat. He provides a service. It's part of the culture. It's part of us. Come on, guys. 25% is no skin off of you. No problem. Or unlimited.
Thank you, sir. Your time is up.
Thank you.
Any other comments from the public?
We have two public comments. Public commenter one, Bob Maiden, please go and unmute yourself.
Thank you. The unmute was a little bit delayed there. I want to second what Matt said, but I also want to say, I know Mr. Bierman is, very dedicated to the proposition that he put forward, but something that was missing in 1985, that's missing now, that's been missing all along, is that no one really goes and looks into how liveaboard boaters serve the public trust. It is in so many ways. It is absolutely true. And he cited, fill in the bay from the very beginning of the McIntyre-Petras Act, and that's incredibly important. They were talking about making infill and actual large physical residential developments and commercial and residential developments on the bay. Right now, as we know, with sea level rise, there's going to be some inundation and it's going to overflow private title. So a lot of this discussion is going to change, and it's even changed in the last 10 years. But in a marina, so the Public Resources Code provides for the public trust. It nowhere in there, and no judicial decision has ever said that living on a boat in a marina is an improper residential use. When you're looking at the marina context, it's already a commercial endeavor. It's a mixed use commercial and recreational offering. And to say that the people living there, oh, that's residential, that individual boat slip is residential, overlooks that whatever the 10%, 20%, 25%, that community serves the public trust. And I sent an email, it's long, but I bolded the headings. And this does not need to be tied to the recreation policy. So I disagree that you have to revisit all of your recreation policies. We should have the staff. We've been asking for a public process for not just the last year, but for longer. I also want to say Nelson Linder did a great job. South City did a great job. And the number of people that want to stay and go upland, that's because they'd have to move their boat to the Delta. Of course they want to stay. Community was there. People lived there 20 years. And a lot of people on these displacement situations, a huge percent flee right away and find the slips that are available. And I can't blame them. That'll be in San Rafael or Sausalito or wherever. So that's why those slips aren't available now. And it is absolutely something that can be done, cutting through bureaucracy to say, hey, if we have seen in the past that we had the authority to make it 10%, which, by the way, at the beginning, it was 10% houseboats and liveaboards weren't restricted. It wasn't restricted to safety and security. And there are so many ways. Please read my email. It goes over default apprenticeship, people learning marine skills, marine electrician, cleaning the creek, having all kinds of events that bring people down to the water, being a liaison. Almost every liveaboard has a recreational sailboat or powerboat. So, you know, you need to look beyond. Thank you.
Thank you. Next public speaker.
Public commenter Zobel, please unmute yourself.
Thank you. I think you can hear me now.
Yes.
Yes, I want to, I agree with what Matt was saying and Allison. I do want to mention, however, that losing my liveaboard status was not voluntary. It was forced on me. And I was told that this new thing called extended stay would cover the same thing. So I didn't know I was being finagled out of something that later on would prove to be crucial. And I know for a fact that I'm not the only one to whom this happened. So a lot of people that lived there, just flying under a different flag, had no clue that this liveaboard thing was going to be so important. So there were more liveaboards than there were official on paper liveaboards. That's number one. The other thing I wanted to mention is that the initial bid was to create housing on the land there. And that got shot down, I believe, by Genentech. So now it's all business. And take a look for yourself. These buildings are monstrous. The wind is picking up more and more severely with every building that goes up. It's going to be a hurricane before we know it. So it's becoming less and less even possible to even go for a nice walk there. The other thing I wanted to say was that I disagree with what was said that it doesn't make the marinas better. It does. It's been proven that it's safer when there are people there 24/7. There's less need for security guards. The community looks out for each other and other boats and actually saves lives. So from what I understood, the initial reason for the limit was overboard dumping, which is not an issue anymore since everyone has the facilities, which can be yearly checked to see if they're up to par so that they can use a pump out. So there's no reason to not up it to 25%, especially since it has a very, living on a boat has a very low environmental impact, much lower than upland housing. And lastly, I want to mention that if the definition of houseboat is that it does not have self-propulsion, then by that definition, boats that do have self-propulsion should not be called houseboats and not be excluded. A cow is an animal, but not every animal is a cow. Thank you very much for listening. And I want to thank the city. The city has been stellar. The city has saved our lives. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes the public speakers.
There are no more hands raised.
Comments or questions by commissioners? Commissioner Jean-Baptiste.
Thank you, Chair Wasserman. First of all, I just want to appreciate the efforts of the staff, both from City of South San Francisco as well as BCDC, to take care of the folks who've been impacted here. I am new to understanding all of the intricacies of BCDC, so forgive me if I am just needing to come up to speed, but I'm a little bit, well, I have some questions around how BCDC has articulated its commitment to equity and how that intersects with some of the constraints of the Bay Plan and the McAteer Petrus Act. I understand the need to hold the distinction between the public trust and sort of privatizing the public trust in the form of housing. I also see that we're living in an era where climate, lack of housing, and economic insecurity are the three greatest threats to our communities. And what that means is that none of us gets to avoid those dynamics. And while BCDC is not a housing agency, we can't ignore the fact that so many of our neighbors are on the edge of being homeless, and none of us wants to contribute to that. So I'm hoping you can speak to, just from a principal standpoint, where the agency stands on the sort of question of doing no harm within the constraints that you hold, how you think about in the longer term, sort of grappling with some of the contradictory sort of application of the principles in the Bay Plan, because we do have privatized use of public trust. We do have folks living on the Bay. So we can't really say that there's no residential use that has ever been permitted. So if you could just give me a little bit of that context, that would be helpful. I appreciate it.
Just a moment before you do that, we're going into committee of the whole so that we can continue the discussion lawfully, since we either have or are about to lose the quorum.
You want me to answer that? You don't want to answer? All right, I can try. That's a really big question because, you know, I'll start with the EJ and equity policies. Our interpretation of the way we use those policies has to be used in, I don't know how to say this, in light of the MAC Act, right? The McAteer Petrus Act is sort of the roots of the tree, and all the policies in the Bay Plan are the tree. And anything you do in the Bay Plan has to be done through that lens of the MAC Act. So it doesn't rewrite the MAC Act, so it changes our authority so that we can do different things that the MAC Act doesn't allow us to do based on environmental justice or equity principles. We can only do what we're allowed to do under the MAC Act. I don't know if that's a really satisfying answer, but it's sort of part of why we think about why we've been so, try to be open-minded about how we've managed liveaboards in the past, anchor outs, houseboats going back to the 80s, has been to try to kind of crack that nut or try to solve that problem in a way that's consistent with the MAC Act, but is like try to be creative, try to do stuff that we wouldn't normally do to help resolve those issues, to reduce that kind of pain that can happen. I don't know if that is really, I don't know if somebody from senior staff wants to hop in for that.
So two things, two responses. It's a great question. During the 2 or so years in which the EJ working group was starting and dealing with how we were going to incorporate environmental justice in the Bay Plan, it was basically decided by the commission that the best way for us to do that is to ensure that that which comes to us has already been vetted. And so that is why you see in the environmental justice portion of the Bay Plan, the requirement that local discretionary permits have essentially passed muster with the guidelines, with the principles that are the beginning of the EJ part of the Bay Plan. And that complies with the MAC Act. That being said, I think the better analogy here actually is what we've done with Richardson Bay. If you weren't on the, but the members of the commission who've been here the past 4 or 5 years know the struggle that we've had with, or the struggle that we had with the Richardson Bay Regional Authority and the city of Sausalito in order to clear up the basically unacceptable liveaboard problem in Richardson Bay. And what essentially has happened is that BCDC has worked very closely with the local cities and counties to ensure that they have made available and will continue to make available the same type of, indeed, probably even more of the types of assistance that the city of South San Francisco has offered. It may be the same because I haven't seen the list, Nels, of exactly what you've done, but it's to the point at which Steve Goldbeck, our deputy director, is on regular calls with Senator McGuire's staff and city staff and county staff and RBRA staff to make sure that the upland locations are available to people who are on the water and candidly shouldn't be on the water because they are dangerous to themselves, because that's dangerous to themselves and others. So that is how BCDC has interpreted this. BCDC, it has been said, and staff will say, is not a housing agency. We have no authority to be a housing agency. So what we do is we make sure that we work with those housing agencies and with the departments on land to move people from where they should not be to where they should be. I hope that helps.
There may be other comments. I'm going to take Chairman's prerogative for a moment because I need to step out at 4 o'clock, and I do have several comments. One, I want to join in the compliments to South San Francisco and the agencies that you have brought together. In my experience, we do not often see as much properly aggressive and proactive actions to respond to our enforcement, or in this case, really compliance, it did not go to enforcement, activities. I also think, although I recognize it's a special situation and in some ways a small situation, the kind of cooperation and outreach to a variety of agencies that has happened is a very good example for other areas of our housing problem, not on the water. So I thank you very much for all of that. I also want to thank staff for their work, and I want to agree with their ultimate conclusion, and then I want to disagree with them a bunch.
Six minutes.
We do not have, it'll be less than that, not much less. We do not have the staff resources to deal with this problem in a remotely comprehensive way. And while the problem of the liveaboards is an acute problem and at least certainly to me, a sympathetic problem. In terms of the scale of the things that we are dealing with, and frankly, even the scale of our housing issues, I don't know as a policy matter how much of our resources it's worth expending on this. But I don't agree with the bottom line that the staff report says, which we simply don't have the resources to do with it, and that's going to end it. And I'm not saying that's in truth what staff is doing, but that's what was presented in the slide. I think there's a significant distinction that has gotten blurred over in some of the presentations between houseboats, liveaboards, and anchorouts. And I think it's appropriate to deal with them differently. And staff has not said any different, but they tend to get mushed together. And I think the liveaboard issue is a separate one. I'm going to suggest to staff, chairman's prerogative, occasionally you can ignore me, but that this needs some more thought on how we may be able to gather some information, look to gather some resources that do not require a 3-year Bay Plan amendment. I actually think I could make an argument that for a number of the liveaboard situations, it could meet the MAC PEDRIS requirements. Now, unfortunately, the applicants to do that are not the liveaboard people. They're the marina operators who are probably not going to want to do that. I think in terms of addressing our housing problem and crisis in this area, certainly the country too, but our area, our home, we're not a housing agency. That's absolutely true. We're not going to solve it. We most certainly do not have the resources to solve it. However, there may be some water-based living that may provide some, even if it's a small part, of addressing the issue. So a couple of suggestions, none of which may be sensible. Actually, doing a simple survey, maybe you know the information, but my guess is not, of how many liveaboards there are in marinas and how many empty berths there are on average in marinas, and probably a couple of other questions I've not thought of, is not very hard to send out. Now, you send out a survey and you don't know the response, but particularly if we enlist the cities who govern these marinas in different ways, we might get something. I don't think it takes a lot of staff resources. That's a piece. Second, I think a little bit more background, and Allison's letter was actually helpful, on some of the distinctions that I said at the beginning of my remarks that get blurred over a little may be sensible. I would like to hear, not this afternoon, because I'm going to step out in 2 minutes, a little bit more analysis of this difference in the policies between houseboats and liveaboards. All of that is simply to say, we're not a housing agency, we have limited resources, but let's think about ways we may be part of the solution and not part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And with that, I pass the gavel over to our vice chair.
Thank you. So we still have time for further discussion on this matter. Commissioner Gunther, Commissioner Arakeen afterwards. Or were you pointing to?
No, I am. I also want to thank the city. It's wonderful to hear not only how comprehensive York is, but how compassionate it has been as well. And that's, I think, an important issue for us to consider here, that we have some compassion for the situation. I was going to suggest exactly what Zach did, not only to find out how many people are actually living aboard, but we now have, if I understand it, we've had a 1 year period where we have had 25% live aboard at Oyster Point. Mm-hmm. What has that done? Has that been any kind of a problem whatsoever to the, I would like to know whether that's the case. I also have a lot of compassion for what Eric has presented and the issues the staff faces. But I think this is a pretty unique situation that we find ourselves in. And I think that to make sure there is not some compassionate way to deal with this I think we would do ourselves a favor to just think about this and see if we can really find a way that doesn't require completely redoing the recreational policies. I mean, we somehow managed to make the change at Oyster Point without doing that. And I don't know if there's a way we can think about it. I do know for a fact that there are going to be more people living on the water in the Bay Area in the future. That is going to be one of our solutions to a resilient shoreline. And so I think that that's another way that we can think about this as well. And obviously, I'm not either a long-term BCDC commissioner nor a lawyer, and
and I'm not a marina owner. I know these things are complicated, but I think that this issue has touched us in particular because of this. And I would hope that we can maybe find a way to be a little more helpful than to just say that we don't have the resources to deal with it.
Commissioner Erickson.
Well, I agree with the last two speakers, and I appreciate the chair's comments that we should really look at the distinction of the different types of situations and are there things that we can do within the scope of the McAteer-Petras Act and the Bay Plan. But this, I think, raises a much bigger issue that is tangential that we have dealt with on a number of instances, whether it's Richardson Bay or Union Point Park in Oakland, where because of the housing crisis that we're seeing in the Bay Area, people are either living on boats or people are living in tents on property within BCDC's jurisdiction or within the jurisdiction of the State Lands Commission. And that's not an allowed use. It's not public access oriented. It's not maritime oriented. And so I do think at some point we're going to have a bigger conversation with the State Lands Commission and probably here too and other agencies about how we deal with this issue statewide, because it's not going to get any better. Mm-hmm. And I do think we need to be compassionate and a bit more open-minded and creative about how we try to deal with these types of situations. I also do agree that I do think that having some amount of people living on boats or on the water, obviously we need to balance all these things in terms of how it impacts the Bay. I do agree with Commissioner Gunther's comment that, you know, did that create impacts? You know, do we have, you know, there's a lot of infrastructure you need to support people living on the water. Mm-hmm. And so that's another thing that we have to take into consideration. But I appreciate the interest in trying to look further at what can be done, but I just want to bring it in a bigger context that ultimately we're going to have to think of something in terms of, do we allow emergency exceptions? Is there flexibility in statutes, whether it's BCDC statute, whether it's the authority provided by the state lands, because this problem is going to be an ongoing issue. It doesn't just impact the Bay Area, it impacts the entire coast of the state of California.
I just wanted to jump in for a second, if that's all right, and address Commissioner Gunther's comments. So I just wanted to bring everyone back to realize this was us being compassionate. We allowed more people in Oyster Point than the MAC Act allows, and we agreed to do it for a year and not to do enforcement. That was us being flexible, being creative, really, and allowing it to happen. Without changing the Bay Plan, we obviously can't allow it for, you know, a real long period of time. We actually thought doing it for a year was a fairly compassionate long-term solution in a compassionate way that got us over that hump. So I think we are doing that, but legally we can't do without changing the Bay Plan permanent changes to that if that's what the commission was looking at.
So I'm wondering if there are other commissioner comments. I definitely have a couple of questions, but I'd like to hear from everybody. You see somebody on the
screen? We have one.
On your top left on your screen.
We have Commissioner Pemberton.
Okay, yes. If you'll just call everybody that's on the screen. Thanks.
Commissioner Pemberton, please go ahead and unmute yourself.
Actually, I'm here with Commissioner Pemberton. This is Commissioner Lee. As you can see, yes, I just want to echo the same comments as spoken by fellow commissioner regarding this issue. Given that I understand BCDC is not a housing agency, that's obviously clear. The issue of housing on boats is something that is not going to get any better. It's going to be something that we'll have to deal with for a lot longer. I think it's just the reality of where things are. So I do think that we need to have a more engaging approach to this issue. One thing I was just asking to see how difficult would it be to get an RFI, like a request for information just from the various marinas, to get a census of how many people are living on the boats currently throughout our jurisdiction in the various marinas. Is this something that we could provide? I think it will be good to better understand the scope of the situation, how many boats are already occupied, how many have exceeded 10%, and how many is not, and what those numbers mean. If the number of 10% is something that might potentially change down the road, how would that really affect the numbers we're talking about? You know, out here, you know, in my other hat as a supervisor of Santa Clara County, we are all constantly talking about finding housing, whether it's interim housing, permanent supportive housing, for our residents here. And this is clearly a very not just a topical issue, it really is the issue of the day. And there's no silver bullet to try to solve it. And, you know, some of the housing on boats is now certainly one of the solutions that people are seeking. So I certainly think that in order for us to completely ignore this problem and say we don't have resources to do it, I would say that would not be wise. I think we need to get ahead of this issue and not try to duck our responsibility on it. Thank you.
Any other comments, questions from commissioners?
Larry, did you want to respond, or
I was wondering if I could respond. Matt, let me ask the question that I have first. I mean, what I'm hearing from a number of people is that we don't really understand the scope of the issue right now without some more facts about how many slips are out there. Are those slips going away? What percentage of them are filled with liveaboards? I mean, for example, if you wanted to talk about a creative solution, this is, I don't know if it's a good idea or a horrible idea, but we say 10% per marina. Could we say 10% of available slips? You know, if some of them have none and some of them have 15%, does it average out to 10%? But basically, what I'm hearing is that people would like to understand better really what the situation is. Is adding 5% going to make any difference at all, really, given the numbers that we're talking about? The other question that I have is my understanding, and I'm sorry, Commissioner Peskin's left because he probably knows, and maybe others of you do, but my impression is that the cities around the bay each have their own housing obligations that have been assigned to them essentially by the state to help solve the state's housing problem. And what I don't know is if the cities are asking for space on the water to meet their housing obligations. Are they asking us or are they asking the state? You know, is there a pressure to, I'm hearing from some of you that we're going to need to put more people on the water, but is that the state's view of how we should be solving this housing problem? Because I haven't heard that yet, it might be. So anyhow, at least for now, it sounds like just getting a little better handle on how many folks we're talking about, you know, would be beneficial for the commission.
Tonight,
Larry.
Larry, go ahead.
Can I ask you, I don't want to cut off Commissioner Jean-Baptiste.
Okay. Do you want to go first?
Very quickly.
I was just going to say we'll go to Eric first and then me, but you first.
Very quickly. If you all do ask the questions about what the current state of affairs is with liveaboard, I would encourage you to also include demographic information so we know not just how many, but who.
Where.
And then secondarily, but I think probably more important, I do think that as the commission grapples with what it means to have kind of a deep-seated commitment to equity, as we start to see that come into conflict with elements of the Bay Plan or elements of the Magotir-Petras Act, we should be thinking about what is the strategy to resolve those tensions. In some cases, you have been, I think, creative in finding workarounds, and it may be that at some point there's just a more structural element that needs to be considered.
So I'd like to just really quickly clarify something that I'm worried maybe didn't come across well in my presentation. So I did say we don't have staff or funding to do this. And even a survey of marinas, we're really stretched then. But that's not the main reason why I'm not recommending doing this. The main reason why is because it's not consistent with the public trust or the Magotir-Petras Act, to have residences on the bay. And to say we should increase the liveaboard amount 10 to 15 to 20 because we want to provide affordable housing is not consistent with the public trust or the MAC Act. That's not a legitimate reason to increase the amount. The legitimate reason to increase the amount might be this particular marina has security issues, or it has problems like that, or it needs some kind of other thing that I can't make up right now that supports the public trust use. That's the main crux of the reason. It's also just not, and that also goes to sort of the process, which is not preordained. Like I can look and go, if I have the staff and capacity, go to the different marinas and go and see what it is. But the result might be like, it's going to impact recreational uses. It's not supporting, to increase it wouldn't do anything to increase a crime problem in recreational marinas. It's not something that's supporting that trust use. It's just, if it's just for affordable housing, it's not going to be a reason to change it. So I just wanted to clarify that because I feel like, I know it sounds like, oh, you guys are just, you know, not doing it because you don't have the resources or something, or it sounds like too much work, but it's really a fundamental inconsistency with that use. It's a non-conforming use with the MAC Act.
Matt, one quick question.
Eric, if not
we,
Matt.
Eric. Sorry. Okay. If we were to increase it to 15%, just hypothetically, the marinas themselves don't have to accept that, do they?
That's correct.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And can I add to that? So another thing that's come up is the enforcement, you know, sort of creative enforcement solutions we've done for different situations. So like Oyster Cove, you know, kind of a stay of enforcement, or in the anchor outs in Richardson Bay, we had like a whole big solution with settlement agreement. One of those things, one of those tools was that we adopted, you adopted a region-wide permit that allowed for marinas in Richardson Bay to increase their 10% liveaboard amount for a temporary period to accommodate anchor outs so that they could get off the anchorage and into marinas. As far as I'm aware, no marina has applied for that. One.
So thank you, Eric. You're channeling me, and I want to make sure people here don't think of you as, you know, BCDC Simon Legree. A couple things on the Richardson Bay issue. Eric just channeled me. What we did, what you did at our suggestion, our recommendation, was to basically say that for 5 years, through the adoption of a region-wide permit, any marina could increase its liveaboard population from 10% to 15% without fear of any enforcement, if it did so in order to take existing boats into the marina.
Anchor outs
into the marina. Two things to note with regard to that. Number one, so far, one, as far as I know, boat that has gone from the anchor outs into a marina, as far as I know, one. And that is because most of the anchor outs have totally unseaworthy vessels that couldn't even think about qualifying to be part of a marina. Second, that five-year window was created in order to give flexibility for the locals to work with marinas. And the most important thing I just said was work with marinas. BCDC, in theory, the commission could say 25%. The commission could say 50%. That doesn't mean that any marina is going to do so. Indeed, it is up to the marinas to decide who lives in those spaces and can only allow a certain number of them. And the interesting thing that I am going to really wonder about, if we're able to do a survey, is how many empty spots there really are in marinas and what the ability would be to get new boats into those slots, into those slips, given that the population you're talking about that are anchor outs probably don't qualify for that. Even if they were to get housing funding, like the county of Marin's doing, in order to try to move them into slips, their boats don't qualify. They're not seaworthy.
We're not talking about anchorites.
I know, but it's the idea being that the issue is whether a marina wants it. It's up to the marina to it would be up to the marina to decide what percentage it would want. BCDC could say, in theory, if BCDC amended the Bay Plan, 25 or 50%. But BCDC doesn't have the ability to say, go do that.
Yeah. Can I also add one thing? I realize I sort of, you know, as Chair Wasserman mentioned, like, you know, there is a distinction between houseboats, anchorouts, and just liveaboards in a marina. And that is not, I'm very mindful of that. I brought up the anchorouts more because when you're dealing with an enforcement situation, you can kind of be more creative, go a little bit outside of the bounds of what you would normally be able to do in a permitting process or in a policy process. So that's why we were able to do the things in like Oyster Cove or in the anchorouts in Richardson Bay. So that's why I brought the, you know, it's sort of a separate thing. It definitely is separate. It also goes back to Commissioner John Baptiste's second part of her question, which was about sort of like how the commission over the time has treated like houseboats, anchorouts, and liveaboards, and they are kind of treated in different ways in the policies and in a special area plan called the Richardson Bay Special Area Plan. It's sort of, you know, it's been a beginning in something called the houseboat wars in the 80s, sort of a long-term issue of how to deal with mostly existing communities in the Bay, like houseboat communities, the anchorouts, and then liveaboard boats policy sort of like came out of that process in a kind of separate way.
All right, we do have one more agenda item. Thank you, Eric, for spending this much time with us on this issue. Complicated for sure.